Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Umicore Full Year Results Conference Call. I am pleased to present Mr. Marc Grynberg, CEO. For the first part of this call, let me remind you that all participants will be in listen-only mode, and afterwards there will be a question and answer session. Sir, please begin.
Thank you, and good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and please let me clarify that the subject of the conference call this morning is the first quarter trading update. I'm pleased to welcome you all today, and I will briefly comment on the first quarter major developments before opening the floor to questions. Clearly, the business climate was somewhat rosier and is somewhat rosier than when we talked a year ago, and we see improvements, varying degrees of improvements in most sectors of the economy, most geographies. While we have not returned as of yet to the activity levels of 2007 and early 2008, the recovery seems to be taking shape and to be gathering steam. That is also reflected in the full year global growth expectations that are now projected in excess of 4% by many economists. Against this backdrop, Umicore performed very well in the first quarter of this year, as you could read this morning from the press release. Our revenues increased by 17% from the same period in 2009, which obviously constitutes a relatively low basis for comparison, especially in light of the massive destocking that took place in early 2009 and tended to exacerbate the downturn in revenues at that point in time. More importantly, I would say, and more significant, is the fact that the revenue growth was also double-digit compared to the fourth quarter of last year, which gives a clear indication, if not confirmation, that the improvement trend that we observed in the middle, that started to take shape in the middle of last year, is continuing. Next to the increase in sales, we're also benefiting from improving supply conditions in our precious metals recycling activity, and also, generally speaking, we are benefiting from higher metal prices. Last year, we discussed about the operational leverage as volumes were decreasing, and that was affecting the margins pretty quickly. Obviously, the operational leverage works in both directions, and indeed more so in the positive sense, as we have now lowered the cost base. And that's why the current increase in sales translates fairly rapidly into improving margins. Assuming that the economic and the market conditions persist, we now expect, or we expect, our full-year recurring EBIT, as you could read this morning from the press release as well, the full-year recurring EBIT to be in a range of 260 to 290 million euro. Again, with the caveat that this depends on, this reflects the current market conditions and assumes that those will continue throughout the year. As anticipated, our working capital requirements have increased, and last year, you know that as the sales and precious metals price decreased, our working capital requirements deflated quite quickly, and as expected, we see now a move in the opposite direction, which is good news because it reflects the increasing sales and increasing metal prices, which benefit our bottom line. And as a result of the higher working capital requirements, our net debt at the end of the first quarter had increased by some 70 million compared to the end of last year. Let me now briefly comment on the businesses individually, and starting with Advanced Materials, where revenues were up 15% year on year, and were also up sequentially from the fourth quarter of 2009. More specifically, we saw notable improvements in demand in all segments of the cobalt and specialty materials business, including the rechargeable battery materials activity and tool materials, two activities that were hard hit last year, both by the downturn in market demand and by the destocking by our customers. In electro-optic materials, we have steady sales overall, driven by strong demand for substrates, both used in solar cells and LEDs, while, on the other hand, the demand for infrared optics was somewhat lower than in the same period of last year due to reduced government-related orders. Quite importantly, the contribution from Element 6 abrasives turned around as a result of higher sales in all application domains and better margins. And as you also recall from the discussions of last year, that activity was severely hit by the downturn starting at the end of 2008, and a far-reaching restructuring program was implemented in the course of last year and is now bearing fruit. Moving to precious metals products and catalysts, this is the reporting segment where the upturn in revenue was most spectacular, with a growth of 29% year-on-year, reflecting improvements across the board. Global car production was some 17 million units in the first quarter of the year. It was up 47% year-on-year and was approximately the same at the same level as in the fourth quarter of 2009. And it is important to know that our sales, Umicore sales in that segment, improved in line with the market. As far as automotive catalysts are concerned, the most notable volume increases were in North America and Japan, which also were the regional market that were affected the most by the crisis, and also the earliest, as the downturn started there in the second part of 2007, so almost a year earlier than in the rest of the world. The Chinese market continued to grow at a spectacular pace, driven to a certain extent by government tax incentives, and more specifically, as far as China is concerned, by tax rebates. In Europe, vehicle production was up 33%, and it is worth noting in that respect that diesel vehicle sales regained some of the ground that they had lost to gasoline last year, a trend which we benefited from, of course, thanks to our excellent positioning on the light-duty diesel segment. In other businesses that are present in that segment of precious metals products and catalysts, we saw also notable improvements. There was a significant upturn in sales in technical materials, and the cost reductions that we achieved last year meant that the profit margins were significantly ahead of last year in that business unit. In jewelry applications, sales grew from high levels of last year. It's one of the businesses that produced a fairly steady performance despite the overall economic context last year, and obviously the recycling activity keeps running at very high levels, driven by high gold prices. In electroplating applications, we saw a clear recovery of demand, in particular in Asia. In precious metals services, our revenues were up 9% on the same period of last year. More importantly, however, more importantly than the revenue development, which is not the most meaningful or the most significant driver, supply conditions are improving, as we had anticipated and announced at the end of last year. Supply conditions are improving, which has a positive impact on the mix of materials that we process. You know that smelting capacity is being brought back on stream in several non-ferrous metals industries, zinc smelting, copper smelting, PGM mining, etc., which has made the availability of their precious metals containing residue streams more abundant. The availability of end-of-life products such as electronic scrap and industrial catalysts remained high, while the supply of spent automotive catalysts has started to recover, probably driven by higher PGM prices. However, in that segment, it is fair to say that the activity levels or the supply levels are still far below the levels that we saw 2 years ago. Also, still relating to precious metals services, you know that the the majority of our former long-term pricing arrangements have now run out. This being said, we benefit from the recent increases in spot prices for precious metals, and we see a similar trend in other metal prices, non-precious metals prices, and that is also impacting us positively as we recover many of those secondary metals such as tellurium, selenium, indium, for instance. Finally, in zinc specialties, we saw revenues decrease 6% year-on-year, so that is the only exception to the overall picture in terms of recovery, and that reflects lower demand in building products. As you know, ore materials in building products come in play fairly late in the construction process, and last year we were still delivering materials for projects that had been initiated and financed before the credit crisis hit the sector. In contrast, we saw less new projects being initiated last year due to the very tight availability of credit for new construction projects, and this has an impact, a delayed impact on our sales this year. That was anticipated, and we mentioned indeed at the end of last year that there was a risk given the low housing starts or new project starts in 2009. There was a risk that we would see some sort of a late cycle effect in building products, and that is the trend that we see this year. In zinc chemicals, the product demand has improved in most segments. However, on the recycling side, it will take a bit more time to see the availability of secondary materials for recycling improve. That depends with the third, that actually follows with a certain time lag, the recovery in overall industrial activity. As a conclusion, I would like to repeat the highlights of the first quarter. Revenues have grown by 17% year-on-year with improved demand across the board, except, as I've just mentioned, in building products. We see buoyant, very supportive supply conditions in precious metals services, driven by the recovery in industrial activity and higher metal prices. Margins are improving as a result of our cost reduction measures that were implemented last year. And in selected businesses, we see also favorable mix developments. And last but not least, I can only repeat that we continue our efforts in research and development or investment efforts in promising growth areas such as rechargeable batteries, as you could read recently from separate press releases, and those efforts continue at unabated pace. At this stage, I would like to open the floor to questions.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the Q&A session. If you wish to ask a question, please press the code 01 on your telephone keypad and you will enter a queue. After you are announced, please ask your question. So once again, please press the code 01 on your telephone keypad to ask a question. And we have a first question from Sophie Jourdier from Citi. Madam, please go ahead.
Yes, morning, Mark. Just a couple of questions, please. First of all, on your outlook statement, you mentioned that it's assuming current market conditions continue to prevail, and I just wondered whether you could elaborate a little bit more in terms of your assumptions, in terms of, I guess, automotive production, the 17 million units in Q1, sort of thoughts on the full year, and also just in terms of, you know, stocking trends. You mentioned destocking has ended. I just wondered whether you thought restocking was having an impact and how long you think that may continue. That's the first question. And just briefly, the second question, cost reduction efforts were obviously also playing a part. I wondered whether you could give us an idea of any quantification on the benefit for the full year from cost reduction efforts. Thanks.
Okay, so let me start with the car production. You have seen that or the underlying assumptions to the outlook and more specifically car production to start with. You saw that car production was about 17 million in the first quarter of this year. And an interesting analogy can be drawn with the car production statistics of the first quarter of 2008, where you had exactly the same number of cars being built globally. Now, it is generally expected that car production in the second quarter of this year, and when I say generally expected, I mean by industry observers and analysts, that car production should be a bit lower in the second quarter than it was in the first quarter, and should be and could be if you maintain, if you continue the analogy with 2008, could be 1.5 million lower than what it was in the second quarter of 2008. So I would say that most industry specialists now see, I would say, car production somewhere between or in the region of 64, 65, 66 million cars. I think that indeed, if you don't have too much of a negative effect, if and when the government incentives run out in the second part of the year, that this is possibly attainable. And I would say we think it's going to be a bit lower than the 65 or 66 that are being mentioned by certain analysts, building or on the trends or the comparison that we make with 2008. So, but that's, I would say, a reasonable reasonable numbers that we see. But I think there is quite a bit of visibility for the second quarter, and it's the figures, the projections for the second half of this year are more of a speculative nature at this point in time, not knowing exactly how the government programs are going to unfold. In terms of stocking and destocking, I think we're probably back to some sort of a normal situation at this point in time, because some of the pipeline refilling effects have started to be seen in the, depending on which activity, have started to be seen in the second part of last year already. So I would not isolate that as one of the key factors in the business development of the first quarter of 2010. I think it was the destocking was a key factor in the first quarter of last year. And some other important assumptions that are being made in respect of the full year outlook is that the metal prices would continue to or would stay at their current levels approximately. Cost reduction benefits, as you know, we're not quantifying those, and we have not done so last year. We're not going to do that in 2010. Suffice to say that our projections assume that we hold on to all of the cost reductions that were achieved last year, so we don't let cost creeping back into the cost base in the course of this year. I think that's the best I can, or the most I can say about the cost reductions, the cost reduction benefits.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. And the next question is from Peter Zwinkels from RBS. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, Marcus. Peter Zwinkels, RBS. A follow-up on Sophie's question on the cost reductions. Obviously, let's say you can maintain a lot of cost reductions, but are you hiring already, or do you have to hire people in the first half of, let's say, in the first quarter of 2010, and then for especially in pressure metal products and catalysts? Second question, on the net debt, you said it's up 70 million. Can you maybe give us some guidance in the split up between change in working capital and in cash flow generation? Third question on the catalyst business, HDD. Have you seen there a year-on-year growth, and especially a difference between Europe and the US? That are my questions. Thank you.
Okay, so first of all, the headcount developments, yes, we are hiring, but let me maybe elaborate on that statement. First of all, I think it's important to say that or to remind you that last year we resorted to temporary measures, technical unemployment, temporary unemployment reduction of working time, and in most cases those temporary measures have now come to an end. So practically all of our colleagues at the Umicore are back to normal work regimes. I think that's one of the key developments, and of course a logical consequence of the improvement in demand and how we need to adjust our shifts accordingly. This being said, and we mentioned that also at the end of last year, you know that we are working on a certain number of growth programs, whether they're related to recycling initiatives or to rechargeable battery materials. And as a result of those growth programs, we have indeed started to create new jobs, and we are indeed hiring. So that's the main reason for recruitment is related to our growth programs rather than the recovery. The recovery has an impact on the temporary measures more than anything else. In terms of cash flow, now at this stage we're not going to give much more details about the development. You will have to bear with us until we publish the first half figures. But obviously, we generated some operating cash flows, and the working capital requirements are a little in excess of the number that I mentioned. And HDD, there is nothing that we have to report at this stage, and you know that we are in the development phase, so we're not so much affected either way by market developments and volume developments in that respect at this point in time.
Maybe a follow-up question on your working capital. Obviously, you're not going to show our details between working capital and free cash flow generation, but did you manage, and what kind of implications did you incorporate by lowering, let's say, the working capital as percentage of sales, and especially in precious metal services? Or is that completely not the case, and can we just plug in, let's say, the historical percentage of sales as a working capital? Thank you.
Again, you will have to bear with us until we publish the full year figures to have more details on working capital.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. And the next question is from Wim Hoste from KBC Securities. Sir, please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, Wim Hoste, KBC Securities. A couple of questions on precious metal services. First, have you started to lock in higher metal prices again, or are you planning to do so in the very near future? Then secondly, on the better input availability in precious metal services, is that something very, very recent, or did that start already from the beginning of the year? And then on the maintenance shutdown of the smelter, was that for two full months, and when are you planning to start the smelter up again? Thank you.
Okay, let me start with the last question because that's an easy one, and actually it's a non-event because it's we have to shut down the smelter regularly for maintenance, so there is no need to emphasize that. It's in weeks, not in months, the maintenance shutdown. But it's really a non-event. On the contracts, yes, there are a number of contracts that have recently been priced for, I would say, for the medium term, so for 1 or 2 years. So that is again a trend that that is taking place, or a development that is taking place. And I cannot tell you at this stage whether we're planning to lock in more prices for an extended period of time, because that depends on the contract negotiations with our suppliers. But that's, in some cases, yes, we have had a number of contracts with extended fixed price. And as far as the supply environment is concerned, no, this is not something that started very recently, because we mentioned that already in the previous conference call, and we also explained about the time lag. We elaborated on the time lag that was generally observed in that business between fluctuations in activity levels at our key suppliers and the effect on the residue streams availability. So no, it is just a confirmation. What we see today and what we comment on today is the confirmation of the trend that we mentioned a couple of months ago.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, sir. And the next question is from Andrew Stott from Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Sir, please go ahead.
Yeah, morning, Mark. I had a couple, actually. Firstly, on rechargeable battery materials, why was there no sequential improvement from Q4 to Q1? I was just wondering if you could talk through the dynamics there. And also within that question, whether the comment about limited availability of feed at for the cobalt refining business in Belgium is linked to that or not, and whether that's a material issue.
I'm sorry, can you second question, please?
Yeah, so you comment on page 2 of your press release that capacity utilization in the cobalt refining business was lower due to limited availability of feed. Could you explain whether that's material to the division, and whether there's a linkage to other parts of the business?
Okay, thank you for repeating the question. First of all, as far as the rechargeable battery materials are concerned, this is one of the, I mean, I talked earlier in general terms about destocking and stocking effects, but rechargeable battery materials is one area where we saw quite a bit of pipeline restocking or refilling in the second part of last year and in Q4 in particular. So actually, it's more it has more to do with the restocking effects in Q4 of last year than the underlying demand trend, which is pretty healthy, as you can imagine. As far as the refining or recycling is concerned, the refining or recycling capacity that we have in Belgium and that is affected by the low availability of feed is much less than the refining and recycling capacity that we have in China, and which is running at very high levels. So overall, it has limited impact on the on the activity levels or the performance of the business unit. It is not totally negligible, that's not what I mean, but in relative terms it is fairly small.
Okay, Mark, sorry, can I just steal another one? It was a question on the comments you're making on the availability of scrap in the PGM business. You're saying it's not yet recovered to 2008 levels. I just wonder why. I would have suspected it would have, but I just wonder why you think that is.
That's difficult to say. I mean, it's why we observe indeed that the availability is not comparable to what it was 2 years ago, and we suspect that hoarding is continuing to a certain extent, so that there may be some continued speculation of higher PGM prices. But it's difficult to have a more detailed or a more precise analysis of the factors behind this this trend.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. And the next question is from Marc De Brouwer from Peter Kemp. Sir, please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Genberg. A question on PMS. How do you feel the evolution of the competition landscape going forward in 2010 to 2011? It was my understanding then restarts were something to in the offing. Hello?
Yeah, just 1 second. Can you repeat the question, if
yes.
I may ask? Yeah.
I said, how do you in PMS? How yeah. do you feel the evolution of the competition landscape going forward? It was my understanding that restarts with competitors at competitors were something to be expected.
Restart of our competitors. Okay.
Yeah.
I would say that today we see limited changes in the competitive landscape, and that's why we are in a position basically to fully benefit from the improving market conditions and the from the improving availability of residue streams. We see, of course, a number of competitors in selected supply segments, in industrial byproducts, in end-of-life materials. They are not the same players. As you know, there is no competitor that can process and recycle the same range of raw materials as we can do. But competition tends to be fairly stable in that respect, and we do not see increasing or a major increase in pressure in that respect. We continue, I would say, to distinguish ourselves through technology and yields and the quality of our processes, and that continues to be a feature in the current recovery environment, I would say.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, please let me remind you that you can still ask a question by pressing the code 01 on your telephone keypad. And the next question is from Tom Ackermans from Kempen & Co. Sir, please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. 3 questions, please. First of all, on PMS. I was wondering if we there should expect a stronger than normal performance from the precious metals management part. Secondly, is there any business unit at the moment where you currently face capacity constraints or where you've cut costs too much? Also in relation to the new battery materials investments. And then thirdly, if you could perhaps comment on the sequential trend we should expect in recurring EBIT throughout 2010.
Okay, so first of all, in metals management profitability levels or contribution levels depend to a large extent on the volatility that we observe in the market, and there is, I would say, nothing really out of the ordinary in that respect. So results could be slightly better than the contribution could be slightly better than what we had last year. This being said, we do not expect anything close to the, I would say, extraordinary levels that we saw 2 years ago.
Okay.
In terms of capacity constraints, there is no business where we have cut too far, and if I can also remind you of the comments that we made last year, we are in a position to adjust capacity fairly flexibly in function of market demand, and where necessary, we are reinstating additional production shifts and adjusting capacity along those lines. There are a number of areas where we are capacity constrained, and this is not related to the cuts that were or the adjustments that were affected last year. It is related to our growth projects, and there are a number of areas where we can indeed hardly cope with the pace of growth in the market demand. One example is in automotive catalyst in China, where, as you may remember, we are currently adding production capacity and capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say there is expansion is a continued feature of or is a continued requirement in China, given the speed at which the market is expanding. And other than that, as you know, we're also preparing for requirements in the rechargeable battery sector, where we see the market developing in a pretty significant and fast manner. And as far and your last question about sequential EBIT developments, no, we're not going to go into that that level of detail at this point in time. I think the overall earnings guidance for the full year should guide you.
Okay, can I just quickly follow up on the battery investments? When would you expect those new investments to be operating at maximum capacity, based on your current market assessments?
Yeah, the new capacity will start up in the course of 2011 gradually, and I think it's a little bit too early to tell or to comment on when we will reach full capacity, but we expect that to be fairly rapid, not to give any details in that respect.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, sir. And the next question comes from Adam Collins from Liberum Capital. Please go ahead.
Yes, hello, Mark. I had a couple of questions. Firstly, on battery materials, you say in the report that there's been quite a noticeable shift to NMC from lithium cobaltite. I wondered if you could say how that affects the profitability of the business. Is that earnings neutral or is that a negative development? And then on the battery recycling side, you mentioned in the release that there's been a pickup in activity in preparation for the EU battery directive. I wondered if you could just explain to us what the status of your involvement in that area is at the moment. I know you're building an adjacent plant which will be operational 2011. But to what extent is that a feature of your activities at the moment?
Okay, so first of all, the shift to NMC is indeed pretty fast, and I think it's impossible to give you an answer on the impact on earnings because there are so many different grades of NMC depending on the applications that are being served that there is no overall answer to that question. Obviously, what I can say is that we are clearly supporting that substitution trend. It's a trend that we actually set in motion a number of years ago to support our customers' development programs as they were trying to become less dependent on cobalt, on expensive and volatile cobalt. So obviously it is a positive trend for us. And regardless of what the margin mix could look like, the fact is that the volume growth is anyway meant to be the key driver for revenue growth in that business going forward. In terms of the rechargeable battery recycling activity, it is an emerging activity at this stage. So today, with the construction of the new facility in Belgium and some of the other technology development costs, we have quite a bit of development costs. And we don't have yet a significant contribution of that activity to our bottom line. And obviously, we are gearing up for a very significant growth in the long term. This is a long-term perspective that we are having for this type of business. So I think it's too early to expect a significant contribution to the bottom line.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. And the next question is from Laurent Favre from UBS. Sir, please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, Mark, and thank you for taking my questions. I've got three, actually. The first is on AC. in North America, you're talking about the changes, your business mix that is preventing you from achieving the same growth as production growth. I was just wondering if you could elaborate on that. Are we talking about market share losses, or if you could give us a bit more color on that. Then second question on zinc specialties and building materials. We've seen a number of construction-related companies in Europe talking about a very good month of March. I was just wondering if you could comment whether you've seen that or whether the number you're reporting for Q1 is really bad across the month. And then last question, I will try again on the EBIT guidance. You talked about the assumptions that you're making for the rest of the year on precious metals and car production. I think for us it would be very useful if you could tell us where you've got very good visibility and what is in the bag. For instance, H1 versus H2. For H1, are we below the midpoint or above the midpoint? Last year you gave us this H1 guidance. I think it could be useful if you could give us really where you've got visibility and where you're making assumptions. Thank you.
Okay, so first of all, in terms of mix in North America, no, it is not a market share impact because the mix is changing all the time because the platforms have a limited lifetime. So by definition, the mix is changing all the time. And today we have if you isolate that one, there we grow a little bit or we recover a little bit slower than the market. In Europe it's the other way around. So does it mean that we are gaining market share in Europe and losing market share in North America? No. It means that we have temporary mix effects, because those effects are always of a temporary nature, because they depend on your platform positioning. I think more importantly is that overall our market share is stable and has been stable throughout the cycle, and the evolution of our revenues globally is fully in line with what you see in the market. So I would not isolate or spend too much time isolating some of the regional differences.
So it was a comment on the industry, not your own sales.
Sorry?
So the comment on North America was a comment for the whole AC industry, not just for Umicore's business.
No, it was about Umicore's positioning. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was about Umicore's positioning, but the difference I make between a mix and a market share is that we do not measure market share every month or every quarter. Because of course it fluctuates all the time, but if you have to look at it over a longer period of time, and there you see that it's extremely stable.
Understood.
Okay, then in building products, I think I don't like to comment too much on individual months and to go to that level of detail within a quarter. However, I would say March was, for the industry, and Umicore is no exception, very different than January and February, for the simple reason that most of the industry came to a halt in January and February because of the extremely harsh weather conditions. And so there was practically no activity, and so everybody could be a little bit relieved that that the weather conditions improved in March and that some of the construction works could restart. This being said, you have in the construction sector, you have people coming at a very different, I would say, times in the construction projects. And for instance, cement would come very early in the project, while facade cladding and roofing materials and rainwater systems would come very late in the project, and sometimes 1 year to 18 months after the cement was delivered. So typically I would say that we use the evolution of the cement market as a leading indicator for our business, as we would use the housing starts and the permit applications. So you cannot, you don't have a one-size-fits-all kind of picture for the construction sector. It depends at what point in time in the construction works your products come in play, and ours tend to come late in the process. And that's why I would say, looking at the cement sales in late 2009 and the housing starts of 2009 and the permit filings or the permit application filings, we expect some sort of a late cycle effect for 2010 for our zinc material business for building applications. In terms of EBIT guidance, now again, I'm not going to go into more detail than the range that we have given at this point in time.
Thank you.
And the next question is from Martin Evans from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Yeah, morning. Thank you. Just a very quick question on your fuel cell comment within the press release. You say it's had a good start to the year, that order levels were received for stationary applications. Could you just remind me, at the stationary side, some areas of your involvement within fuel cells, and also in terms of your comments about collaboration with OEMs for automotive applications developing positively, again, which sort of areas of technical involvement are you involved with in terms of the car company? Is it sort of in terms of electric cars and batteries and so on and so forth? Thanks.
Yes, you know that addressing first in first place the second question about the fuel cells, the automotive developments in fuel cells. You know that a few OEMs are I would say committed to continuing the development of fuel cell technology, and they see, I would say, alternative powertrains such as electric and I would say hybrid vehicles as an intermediary step to reach, I would say, the ultimate goal of having fuel cell powered vehicles. And we cooperate with them and trying to develop some technologies that could make it to a commercial stage at some point in time in the process. At this stage, most of the projects are either in development phase or in pilot phase. Pilot meaning that they are being tested, the products are being tested on prototypes in limited numbers. But I think this is one of I would say, if in the very long term and from a very long-term perspective, this is one of the developments that we feel is important to Umicore and supplements very well what we are doing in first place in automotive catalysts, and also what we are increasingly so doing in the area of hybrid and electric vehicles, or more specifically in the area of lithium-ion materials for those type of vehicles. We see a very strong complementarity between those technology developments, and also a very strong consistency in terms of having products and materials that fit the various development horizons for future electrified vehicles. On the stationary side, I would not place too much emphasis on that. This is fairly small, and we have a number of customers in that area, and we deliver products there. But I think indeed the most you have to bear in mind that our developments in fuel cells overall are at development stage. It's not yet commercial business, and commercial business of a significant size, and our focus remains on the long term automotive development.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, sir. And the next question is from Peter Cartwright from Fisk London. Sir, please go ahead.
Yes, thank you. My question has been answered already.
And we have a follow-up question then from Sophie Jourdier from Citi. Madam, please go ahead.
Oh, thank you. Sorry. Just a couple of quick follow-ups. I just wanted, on PMS, to understand how important the improving trading conditions in that division were to your lifting of the full-year guidance. It seems to me as though with supply conditions back at 2008 levels and spot prices offsetting the lower sort of contracted pricing, that business, you know, perhaps if not back at 2008 levels, back at 2006, 2007 sort of profitability levels, and that would seem to me to be a major part of the upgrade. I just wanted to see if that was a correct assessment. And then very briefly, I just wondered whether you could remind us of your CapEx budget for the year. Thanks.
Well, I'm not sure what you refer to in terms of upgrade of the full year earnings, because it's the first time we provide the guidance. I guess you mean probably the difference between our guidance and the market consensus prior to the release.
Yeah. Okay. I think in February the sort of implication of the second half profits last year being continued into this year was taken by some to be some sort of guidance.
Okay. Clear enough. Now, indeed, I think it is your analysis is correct that we're not back to the levels, to the extraordinary profitability levels that we saw a couple of years ago, but we are ahead of what we had last year with supply conditions and also improving spot prices, really making up or more than making up for the fact that some of the long-term pricing arrangements have come to an end.
Great, thanks. And the CapEx?
CapEx. I think what we mentioned late last year or earlier this year was that would be in the same region as in the past couple of years of 200 million euro. Now, I have to say that with the project that we have just announced in rechargeable battery materials, with the 60 million plus investment that is planned in Korea, Japan, and China, that we will probably exceed that level. But I would say the ramp up is probably going to be weighed more towards the second part of the year.
Great, thank you very much.
Thank you, madam. And we have another follow-up question from Andrew Stott, Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Sir, please go ahead.
No, that's fine. It was a CapEx question as well, so that's done. Thank you.
And we have a final question then from Mark van der Heest from Fortis Bank Netherlands. Sir, please.
Good morning, gentlemen. Three small questions from my side. Maybe first, can you comment on potential input cost price inflation? Do you see that anywhere in your business, and if so, where do you see it the most? Second would be on the currency impact that you noticed maybe in the first quarter of your 2010. What was the impact? And finally, maybe could you comment generally on what you're seeing in the different regions in terms of top-line growth? That would be helpful. Thank you very much.
Okay, in terms of input price, we don't see much of an impact, much of an inflationary pressure at this stage. I think we have to bear in mind, though, that energy prices tend to increase, and I think this is going to have some impact. And I would say metal prices are increasing. This is one of the most significant input prices, and in most cases, if not all cases, this is passed through to the customers. And the non-metal related input prices are, relatively speaking, less significant. And again, at this point in time, we don't see much of an inflationary pressure in that respect. Currency impact, you're right in pointing that out. We benefit indeed from the strengthening of the U.S. dollar versus the euro, and typically I think that's the guidance we have given already, and which is unchanged. Typically, a 1 cent change in the exchange rate corresponds to 1 million of EBIT change. This being said, though, it's a little bit more complicated because with our increasing activities in certain regions like Korea, China, Japan in the future, Latin America, etc., we are also exposed to multiple currency fluctuations like the Korean won, the Brazilian real, or the South African rand, the Japanese yen, versus the US dollar and versus euro. So it's somewhat more complicated. However, I would say, yes, we tend to benefit for the time being from the strengthening of the US dollar. Now, in terms of the regional top line growth, no, I think it's we have provided in the trading statement some elements as far as the precious metals products and catalyst business is concerned. For the other businesses, we would not want to go into that level of comments.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. And we have no other questions, sir. Do you have any closing comments?
Okay, so first of all, let me thank you for for attending the conference call, and the closing comment that I can make is that if you have follow-on questions, as usual, please do not hesitate to contact our investor relations team. They will be pleased to assist you and to address the questions that that you could have in the coming hours or days. So thank you and have a good day.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's conference call. Thank you all for attending.